game, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Too Much Movie. This is a 90s movies podcast with me and two beautiful men, where we discuss movies that are simply too much, that break the bounds of often their genre or everything that they're doing, or sometimes they're too much because they have not aged well. And I think you could say both things about the movie we're covering today. Now, I want you to say hello to my first co-host, the man with an ass like a 10-year-old boy, Chris Candy. Say hello, Chris.
Oh, have you ever killed anyone? Hello.
And I want to also say to someone who fucking took the ice cube trays out of the freezer. What kind of a sick bitch takes the ice cube trays out of the freezer? It's Rob Belushi, everyone. Say hello, Rob.
I got a little dick. It's pathetic.
Yes, we are indeed talking about James Cameron's remake of a French film called True Lies from 1994. Gentlemen, this is the film that for many years, despite making hundreds of millions of dollars, was rarely available on streaming services, was rarely available on physical media, didn't make the jump from DVD to Blu-ray, was parlayed around through like back channel conversations in Vimeo links on 35 mil scans of the movie. And then finally, it sort of reemerged as James Cameron has like remastered his entire collection of movies now onto 4K. And it's around. And it's a movie that was massive for me as a kid, has not aged well at all, which we'll cover as far as its like political machinations, but it's kind of fascinating to look at. And is Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Cameron doing James Bond, essentially. And it's something that I remember fondly. I always enjoy watching it. And despite the kind of final third with its weird political problems, is patently hilarious to me that someone misappropriates government funds so beautifully to spy on their wife cheating with Bill Paxton. Like, I cannot get enough of the first two thirds of this movie, despite whatever happens in the final third, which is a bit problematic. I love this movie to bits. So yeah, I'm just so excited to talk to you both about it.
Yeah, that's exactly my feelings as well. This movie is great until it's not. and it does exactly take place in that back third. It just is this really clever film. It's a good play on a spy movie. It's got all of those beats to it. And then it just kind of, you know, devolves into a Arnold Schwarzenegger shoot 'em up thing, which has its own place, but is definitely like a tired kind of trope. And I don't think we realized how tired it was going to be when I saw it in Westwood in 1990, whenever, at the Fox Theater. And it fucking rocked. When I first saw it, the first watch of this was awesome. It was totally Van Halen, rocked, fucking blew my face off. And then, yeah, when I rewatched this most recent time, it was like, ah, yes. Hello, but we'll get into that.
I agree. I will state that, you know, look, there are things that I'm not, I mean, I can't make a movie like James Cameron can make a movie, so I don't want to be some fucking podcast, you know.
Right, 100%.
Cocaine, you know, sober cocaine addict trying to talk shit, but there are movies, like, if we're going to do this, I was kind of in the chat with you guys, like Eraser, Last Action Hero, Total Recall. Like, there's some really good Arnold from this time. And I liked Eraser. That's
the Eraser's a great movie.
It's great. Yeah, Eraser's great.
Yeah, Eraser has some good stuff in it. It is a bit weird. It get like, again, the
James
wheels
Conn.
Fall off. The wheel. Oh, my God, James Conn. The wheels fall off Eraser, but it has good ideas. Like, it's going for something and it doesn't quite land the plane.
And so I agree with Chris. Like when I saw this movie, it was like a 14-year-old's fucking dream. Yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah. And like the third act, for whatever it is, I'll tell you this. Cameron, he just can't fuck up action. He's amazing. Like the two things I remembered before I rewatched this the other night for 20 fucking bucks, to your point about not being available anywhere.
Yes.
Was
I'll speak
the
to
Harrier
that
jet.
The Harrier yeah, jet.
Yeah. The Harrier jet sequence is still like ultimately so tense and amazing with Dushku dangling off that fucking crane. How great is Baby Dushku?
Baby Dushku is amazing.
I mean, shout out amazing. To the double-headed eagle, Albanian heritage of Eliza Dushku. She's fucking, I love her and everything. She's fucking amazing. She's beautiful. She's talented. She's smart. Even without much to do in this movie, some of these child actors, like, you know, the Dominic Swains of what is it? Castor Troy. What's that movie?
Face off.
Yeah. Dushku blasts Swain out of the water. Okay. And the other thing that I've remembered since the day I watched it was the line "ass like a 10-year-old boy," which to me is like so fuck. It's maybe one of the funniest lines in movies ever to me. Like, it's so fucking weird and visual and awful and hilarious and like it is so fucking funny to describe a grown woman with an ass like a 10-year-old boy. That is just, it's like it breaks it trend it's a total transgression. It is totally
it's
fucking
fucked. It's
malignant.
It's fucking crazy.
It's such a malignant thing to say about anyone, and it does not stop making me laugh. That being said, like, this movie to me really exists, like the cleverness of this movie are the best parts of the movie, which is the dance scene with Jamie Lee Curtis, who is fucking amazing, and the interrogation scene with her and Harry. Interesting, great, amazing tension, great stakes, personal stakes, which is hard. It's hard to give personal stakes to Arnold Schwarzenegger in movies, right? Like in Eraser, he's trying to protect someone, which is great, but like, you know, nothing bad is going to happen to him. You know, he's not going to die. Like, it's hard to get those stakes with him. So,
and it's also, you have to make the stakes like the devil, like in End of Days.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like you have to make him like going against the devil. You're like, well, you can't possibly beat the fucking devil, can he? And you're like, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, and to that, but to exactly. So those moments while Arnold, you know, does what he does and it's fine. Like the script carries it through all that stuff. To me, the best parts of this movie are Bill Paxton. A quick story about that role. So, you know, on the, what is it called? What's the term for people like me and Chris who are second generation?
Nepo babies.
Nepo
right,
babies.
Okay, so here's a great Nepo baby insight. So this script came out and I was like, I'd have to stay with my dad for 6 weeks. And I want to emphasize have to due to divorce. Like 6 weeks over summer. And that's when I got to read like Heat and all these cool movies because he was like trying to get into them. He really wanted the Tom Arnold role, and I think he was really close. And then it went to Tom Arnold. And then he really wanted the Paxton role, and it went to Paxton. And like, in retrospect, people love Tom Arnold in this role. He's just not charming. Like he's just a pig. You know what I'm saying? And like, you want I like, he's funny-ish, but like, I don't love it. Like, I posted something on Twitter and everyone was like, don't sleep on Tom Arnold. I'm like, he's fine. Like, you guys, he's fucking Tom Arnold. Like, he's fine.
This is the jokes or whatever. Perfect conditions for Tom Arnold to crush. You know, like, they gave him rolled out a red carpet for him to crush in this movie. And he doesn't I think he does a great job. I'm fond of him in this movie. I'm not fond of Tom Arnold.
I'm fond of him
general,
too. But I'm fond of him too, but like, but he, The one line that I like is like, you're never home. She's a flesh and blood woman. What are you going to do? But it still doesn't, it doesn't get him back from like, what a 1 degree, like there's no humanism in his comedy. They're all asshole riffs.
Yeah.
And like, I just, you want to,
yeah.
There are guys who can play assholes that you see at least a little bit why they're an asshole. For instance, Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Like, he speaks all the subtext later, but like, Paxton should have gotten the fucking Academy Award for this role. There's one look he gives when he's in the fucking trailer or whatever that he fucking lives in. And he's talking to Jamie Lee Curtis about going to Paris, and he goes, and a quick stop over in London.
And he goes,
it is the fucking funniest fucking thing. I mean, he's just having a delight. And Tom Arnold is always working. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's why Paxton's so great. He's so fucking great. And like, he's the only one that, like, all the stuff with Arnold, with saying bitch a bunch and all that. I know that's the 90s and stuff, but it's so hard. And like, Paxton is forgiven for saying the same type of terrible, by me at least, you know, who has a lot of fucking interior work to do, admittedly. But like, when he's saying titties that make you stand up and beg for buttermilk, like, for some reason, it's just like, I understand that this is the vocabulary that is within the grasp of this man. Yes. And he's singing a song of celebration from a twisted, broken trumpet. You know what I mean? And like, I just, it's his movie. I'm so glad I forgot that he came back for the button in the end where he runs out. He's so fucking funny. And he's the best. Rest in peace. Fucking Bill Paxton, I love
it. Rest in peace. And what I would thought I would bring up to you guys right now, this is the best part in the introduction, so to bring it up, is like when he says, I got a little dig, it's pathetic, which is so funny. What is actually awesome now in full high definition is when you see Bill Paxton in his boxer shorts, he's got like a meat hammer. And you're like, man, he's a great actor, because back in the day, you couldn't tell in those shorts that there was actually a hammer in there. And you're like, nah, Bill Paxton fucking rules. And like, he's so good. He's so good.
But I believe that that character believes he has a little dick.
Yeah, of course.
And like, his dad fucked him up or whatever. Someone, you know, like even if it's a huge ass fucking dog.
Give this man a posthumous Academy Award for a performance in a 1994 movie. Someone.
The fucking In Memoriam should have just been his roles. That's it.
We talk so much about continuations of characters, and we talk so much about scenes, and like, for a sequence in a movie to really work, to your point, Rob, like, some of them work really well in this movie, some of them don't work so well, but that Paxton sequence hijacks the whole fucking movie.
The whole movie,
you know, like, it's just all of a sudden, like, it's about this guy who seduces women with a crazy lie. And it's like, oh, this is its own thing. And I think, to kind of tie it into everything we were talking about from like the top, yeah, James Cameron is a fucking amazing psychopath director. Like, this guy is top notch. And you know, I remember watching a behind the scenes of, was it The Abyss? Is that the one he directed?
Yeah.
Amount of detail that went into that set, the underwater sequences, all of this movie has none of that. So he just, it's kind of like this guy is an amazing swimmer, but he's an incredible runner. He's just like in top peak performance, you know. He's been filming underwater for the whole 80s, and now he gets to come on dry land and just make a fucking action movie. Like, he can do it, and he knows exactly what to do.
I did this underwater thing. Now I'll put the final fucking action sequence just hovering around a crane for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Exactly.
And have a plane, like, and everything is done.
A Harrier.
a Harrier jet reverse into a building. And I still am watching this now in 2024 going, how in the fuck did they get some of these shots? I don't understand.
How the fuck did he do it? How did he do it?
How do you have Schwarzenegger perfectly in frame, swing under a crane? It's like perfect continuity of background. I'm like, I don't know how they did this. Unless they shot plates. I don't know how they fucking did it. It's amazing. It's amazing.
He leaves Dushku dangling from that fucking crane to go shoot that helicopter for so long.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, keep going, Chris. Balls in my stomach.
Sidebar. I was able to watch this movie for free on Tubi, and that's why I threw it in the chat, because I just was like, on Tubi, and that's like the free app for those people who don't know it. So I got to see this fucker for free, but then when I went to rewatch it today, I was like, oh, I'll be fine, because it was $20 and I couldn't find it anywhere else.
It isn't anywhere. $20, dude.
No, it isn't. And but it is a great movie, and you know, we'll get into the other beats of it, but like, I will say, Tom Arnold, all I'll say is this, is that that character, I think this movie, it's like, everyone is like an archetype. Everyone is their own food group. Like, everyone gets the job done. And I have to say that Tom Arnold gets a job done of being like a really, there's no nuance, but I would say, I'd argue that like, it's a gift that people like Jamie Lee Curtis or Bill Paxton can infuse some nuance to it. But this is a film that doesn't have nuance. The nuance is in the visual, the nuance is in the direction, the nuance is in the cinematography, in the action sequence. And so he really does do a good job of like, he knew he just needed to come in and play a four to the floor drum piece and let Arnold do his thing. And, you know, but I agree. That's an interesting, like, what if Belushi was in that role. But he probably would have brought in some coolness to it. You know, he probably would have brought in.
I mean, because you think about, like, and I understand why he didn't get the role, because I won't say anything disparaging, but like, I don't understand. I really don't know why he didn't get the role. I can only assume.
No one knows
that,
why. Yeah.
But Red Heat happened.
He did Red Heat with Arnold. And like that character of Bernie Litko, who is a disgusting pig. But like, I mean, I have a very complicated relationship with my dad. I'll give the guy his just desserts. Like, he infuses that role with like a fucking desperation and I know it's another action comedy, like it's tonally,
but maybe
similar.
I feel like that's the only line that gets it put through, which is like, maybe Arnie's like, I love Jim, we just did Red Heat together, but I can't do another movie with him that's like this. Like, I feel like the Tom Arnold bit is like, I want Tom Arnold, because this is the great thing about Tom Arnold, unlike Belushi. If it's Belushi,
like whatever.
I'm just saying.
No, it is.
Yeah.
No, it absolutely is. We're taking the podcast.
Welcome to
Jim got
Nepo
to do Mr.
Baby
Destiny
Corner here with Chris and Rob.
Yeah. Curly Sue, Mr. Destiny. Everything's history after that. You know what I'm saying?
No, but what I was going to say was, I actually don't believe he'd stay in the van all the time. You know what I'm saying? Tom Arnold is like, why can't I get out of the van? But also, he's never getting out of the van. That's his job. Stay in the
van.
That's
a great point.
And I love that about him, because he's like, why don't I get out of the van? And it's like, it's so much more believable that now the incredible fucking like Academy Award winning and nominated producer Grant Heslov, who plays Faisal in this movie, it's more believable that he gets out of the van as a fake cameraman and shoots people than ever Gibb getting out of the van. Like, Gibb doesn't get out of the van. He's just Arnold Schwarzenegger's foil. And I just feel like Arnie's like, Tom's like, he's always going to be the guy that says, I want to get out of the van, and he's never going to get out of the van. Like, and that's,
yeah, because he's a piece of shit.
And that was also, I think it's a physical thing too. Now that I think about it, you know, Jim Belushi was probably in better shape at the time. Yes. There is a noticeable contrast, especially in that X-ray scene when they're walking through. You see kind of the gut on Arnold. You see this chiseled, you know, Schwarzenegger. Like, I'm willing to bet, and this just goes back to then what I'm talking about, how they're like types of food. I just feel like Cameron makes these big, you know, McDonald's popcorn style fucking corpo movie things, you know, where it's like, I mean, he fucking designs his actors now in a computer, you know, so it's like, I just think he was probably thinking more in that place, and it plays to the comedy. But
can I say one thing also? The funniest part of the movie obviously is the Paxton scenes, but I do love that Arnie has, like, he has to be Arnie, and you can tell that Cameron had like a genius idea of like having him like ADR sorry, like every time like he messes something up, like he goes sorry, like he's so apologetic. He just now is like, oh, that's actually the way that we is into this character. That he's perfect, but he's super like apologetic and understated and doesn't want to say so. By the end of the movie, the sorries are gone. There's no sorries. But like, you know, riding the horse, that's a great like Washington scene, riding the horse through there. The
great
horse chase with the motorbike, it's fantastic. The bathroom scene's freaking phenomenal. Sorry. I love Schwarzenegger's comedic timing in this because it's the most talkative that he is in the James Cameron movies that he stars in, and it's a great choice. And I think that they just absolutely knocked that out of the park together. And yeah, then Tom Arnold's the kind of voice of reason or craziness along the way. Yeah. But he's never getting out of the
movie. He's great. Look, he does his job. He does it well. He hits his bits. And like, I think my favorite moment of his is when they're listening to Paxton in the car. And he's like, at first I hated him, and now I kind of like him. Like,
yeah,
great.
This just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. It's like a great line, and like I really believed it. He's a little sweaty for my taste, but like he is Zenith 90s.
I think that's the point, though. I think like there's no real heart to the character. He's just kind of like, he's like a booger. I don't know. Like, he's just this kind of like.
No, dude, booger. You mean from Revenge of the Nerds?
No, I'm just saying, like, he's like,
he means a physical embodiment of a booger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's
like,
just like, he's
like, let's talk.
No, booger is amazing. Yeah,
you can
booger's
see a
incredible
lifetime in booger's face. Like, he's fucking
I know,
incredible.
No, but Tom Bart, I was actually talking today about this with a friend of mine, like. You know, Tom Arnold and Roseanne kind of made like a career of just being volatile. And I think like they were riding off of that, and they needed this guy to be, you know, a fucker, you know, and he did it. And I think that he's kind of now reformed. So it's kind of, I think, you know, there's like a new light and scope to his career. But it's interesting. Paxton and Tom Arnold are two standouts for me in this, and then it's like a tour de force with Jamie Lee Curtis. But
before we get to our actual segments, our two favorite scenes, and our two favorite characters, and our two favorite quotes, there's just one last thing. I want to thank the Everything Everywhere All at Once promo trail for somehow unearthing the real life story and photography of Jamie Lee Curtis actually being plucked out of a limousine that was crashing off of a bridge to do the shot that is in this movie for real. So Jamie Lee Curtis is strapped onto that like guy's arm, and obviously using special effects, they take out the wiring or whatever, but she was actually in a limousine that was driving off of a bridge that had been taken out or driving off of something.
What?
And they plucked her out of the car. It's real. I'm going
to
send it to you guys. They sent around that picture, and Jamie Lee Curtis was talking about it, because I think that like James Cameron had written a nice post, or Arnold had been talking about, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm so glad that she's like, you know, getting all the plaudits that she deserves this late stage in her career. And she thanked Arnold for getting her cast in the movie and all this sort of cool stuff. But she actually in the movie, it's not someone else. It's Jamie Lee Curtis getting plucked out, so they can get that shot of her going, like that's real.
Yeah.
That's James Cameron.
Fuck, man.
So in this movie, as much as it's weird and problematic, and it has absolutely outdated views of Mideastern terrorists, like as the potential crossover or takeaway from, very George Bush senior era use of like, what is America's threat? Not knowing perhaps that ultimately it would result in a real life terrorist attack that then had all Middle Eastern people profiled unfairly, basically for the next decade after that had occurred. But there's some really fucking cool shit in this stupid popcorn movie. And one of them is that Jamie Lee Curtis really got dangled out of a helicopter for that one shot.
Wow. I mean, she's the queen of Nepo babies. She is our queen.
She's our queen. No, she's our queen, dude.
I bow to fucking her. I'd be like, James, you can't do this another way. Like, you want to pull me out of this fucking limo that's going off this bridge? I mean, I'm happy to be here.
She's got the real. She it, like
that's
I
crazy.
Only got one. You know, she's got two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh.
The two parents is a big one.
Rare Pokemon of Nepo babies. That's like a electrified Pikachu of Nepo babies.
This right now is rose candy erasure that I will not stand for. A celebrity in my house. Okay.
No, she is.
That's
true. You're right.
No, she's amazing. And like, first of all, looks, it's like that scene of her and then Demi Moore and Striptease, and it's like the two best.
Let's pump the brakes. Okay. Let's get to our two favorite scenes, and we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and talk.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately.
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, gentlemen, I actually think, unlike other movies, I genuinely think that the centerpiece scene of Simon in the middle of this movie, like the Simon sequences, including the dream, like I'm going to say that is almost one like extended digression that this movie takes. I don't think that I think that James Cameron had to explode a fake nuclear warhead and do the Harrier scene just to recover from how good that central sequence is, like as far as like everything else paling. So I want to just like say, folks are going to hear clips of us play some highlights from that scene, because of those scenes that are the Simon scenes, because I feel like almost you could just say any scene that's got Bill Paxton in it is the scene of the movie.
You sure you weren't followed?
No, I mean, I kept looking behind me like you taught me, but I didn't see anyone.
Okay, it's just things are a bit hot right now. If I get a signal, I may have to leave suddenly.
I understand.
Look, it's my job to take risks, but not yours. I feel bad about bringing you into all this, but you're the only one I can trust.
Were you out on a mission?
We say, go covert operation, and this one will. It got a little rough.
Worse than Cairo?
Cairo. Cairo was a day at the beach next to this.
The guy's a spook.
With Vahoma.
He could be working her to get to you.
Did you read the papers yesterday?
Yes.
Sometimes a story is a mask for a covert operation. See two men killed in a restroom and two unidentified men in a running shootout ending at the Marriott.
That was you.
You see, you're very good. You recognize my style. You're a natural at this.
The guy's a fake, man. He's taking credit for our moves.
What happened?
Hardly worth talking about. Two of them won't bother me again.
Unbelievable.
You chased one.
Something came over me. I just had to nail this guy, no matter what the risk. Pretty hairy. I thought he had me a couple of times, but I really can't take credit.
Well, why not?
It's the training. Shapes you into a lethal instrument. You react in a microsecond without thinking.
I'm starting to like this guy. Oh, we still got to kill him. I mean, that's a given, you know. Goddamn used car salesman. I mean, this keeps getting better and better. I'm sorry, Harry. I know this has got to be painful. But you got to admit, it's pretty damn funny. I mean, if it was just some idiot, not you, you'd be laughing your ass off. I mean, this is...
One born every minute.
It wants you, too. Feel it vibrate? Say, how about a little spin?
Sure. See, it's not just a car, it's a total image. An identity you have to go for. This isn't some high-tech sports car. Tell you the truth, it doesn't even handle that great. But that's not the idea, is it? What are we talking about here? Pussy, right?
Absolutely.
Let's face it, Harry. The vet gets them wet. But it's not enough. If you really want to close escrow, well, you gotta have an angle.
Suppose you have an angle.
It's killer. I mean, look at me. I'm not that much to look at. No, I can be honest. But I got them lining up. And not just the skanks either. Well, some are.
So what's the angle?
Oh, no. Sorry. Trade secret.
Okay. Just ask yourself. What do women really want? You take these bored housewives married to the same guy for years, they're stuck in a rut. They need some release. Promise of adventure, a hint of danger. I create that for them.
So basically, you're lying your ass off the whole time. See, I couldn't do that.
What are you, a Boy Scout? No. Think of it as playing a role. It's fantasy. I mean, you got to work on their dreams. Get them out of their daily suburban grind for a few hours.
And what about their husbands?
Dickless. I mean, let's face it, if they took care of business, I'd be out of business. You know what I mean?
Those idiots.
Hey, you mind keeping it under 90? I'm still trying to pay for this dental work.
So who are you working on right now?
I always got a couple on the hook, you know. There's this one right now. I got her panned like a dog. It's great.
What does she do?
Some sort of legal secretary or something. You know, uptight and conservative. Oh. She could be so hot if she wanted to be.
Hey, but you, she gets to be real hot, huh?
Red hot.
Yeah.
Her thighs steam. It's like a dying plant just needs a little water. Married to some boring jerk.
Married to some boring jerk.
Yeah, you know he doesn't appreciate her. She's like all these babes. You get their pilot lit, they can suck start a leaf blower. Oh, gosh, she's got the most incredible body and a pair of titties make you want to stand up and beg for buttermilk. Ass like a 10-year-old boy.
So can we just say that that is the scene and talk about anything else around it? Anything else around it?
We can agree.
Yeah, we can agree.
We can agree that all Paxton scenes are peak True Lies. We can agree. I mean,
The guy who could do the lead character in Twister, Simon, and then the We're All Gonna Die guy in Aliens. Just name me another one. There's not another guy in the universe.
It's the only scene in the movie where it makes you question, am I watching a action movie that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, or am I watching this like weird comedy starring Bill Paxton? Like, it changes the pH of the movie in such a great way. I think around it, I will say, I'll just leave it at this. I love the details. I love his briefcase. I love when she opens it. It's got all the fucking things in it. The fact that this character made that for someone to stumble upon. Like, I just think that shit's incredible.
It's so fucking funny when he walks past her in the Chinese restaurant and sees her, and then his approach is so fucking funny. It's like, I need you to hold this. And then he looks back and goes, oh shit. And
yes. Yeah. Like,
it's so funny. And then just one other line of his, since we're not doing his lines, is, I'm navel linked. I have to lie to women to get laid, and I don't score much. It's so funny. It's so funny. Navel lint is such a fucking weird thing. It's like another thing where I'm like, this is what his father told him growing up. Like, he's a little dick.
Who wrote this movie?
He's navel lint. Jim Cameron did.
So it was
based it on those other guys.
Yeah, it was a screenplay adapted from a film called La Totale, which is a 1991 film. And Cameron directly adapted it into his film. So the other writers, Claude Zidi, Simon Michel, and Didier Kaminka, did the screenplay for La Totale. And so there's a lot of similarities, and then there's a lot of Cameron, right? Like, so a lot of the funny little lines and things and bits and pieces, as you would expect, it's steroided, like, from James Cameron. He's just like supersized everything. Everything's bigger. Everything's got more stakes, you know? I mean, you know,
yeah,
Corvettes being chased by helicopters, black helicopters at night, and all that sort of stuff. Like, La Totale does not share that same sort of feeling as this movie. It's completely different.
I was watching this movie last night, and the scene where he's in the Corvette with my wife, and the scene where he's in the Corvette and he's like, but that's not the idea, is it? What are we talking about here? Pussy, right? My wife was like, looked at me like, what the fuck? I'm like, hey, 90s. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like a movie like this,
The vet gets wet.
This is a time where like they made movies and they created characters that were just so volatile. But my mind thought, oh, I guess this is just how people are and we're okay with it. Yeah. But upon rewatch, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, even like the ass of a 10-year-old boy.
Ass of a 10-year-old
like,
boy is horrendous.
No wonder all these fucking maniacs think they're pedophiles all over the place. Listen to a line like that. You know what I mean? It's like,
she's like all these, you know, it's, you get their pilot lit, they could suck start a leaf blower.
Yeah. It's like, it's just imagine like the conservative right listening to this. It's planting little Easter eggs for them to get to 2024, you know? But I think that, are we just agreeing that all Bill Paxton scenes are great? Because I have a scene that I have. You know,
oh, no, please. Yeah. Oh, the Bill Paxton, like I said, my theory is, my working theory of this movie is that the setup is phenomenal, right? We get the great, you know, Schwarzenegger breaks into this sort of Austrian palatial home, surrounded with all these sort of rich arms dealers, etc., does the phenomenal scene with the absolutely peak 90s hottie Tia Carrera. We haven't gotten to her yet. We will. Does that phenomenal scene, leaves. The movie comes back. There's like a little bit of playfulness. There's the beginning of something. And then the whole movie is hijacked by this absolutely incredible Simon sequence that can only be outdone by blowing. This is the only way you can outdo Bill Paxton. Explode a nuclear bomb in the Florida Keys and like smash into buildings with a Harrier jet and like shoot the villain on a missile into his own helicopter of bad guys. Like, that's
only way that you can,
like, so that's,
it's so weird that he says, you're fired. It's so weird that he says you're fired, because
you know,
it makes sense.
You know, Trump saw this movie. you know,
he's being, yeah, you're fired. It's Trump. It's Trump. And like Trump is, you know, the fascist flying the fucking Harrier jet, exploding anyone who isn't a white capitalist. But there is also like, there is no situation in which there is any employment attributed to this guy at all. So like, it's just a visual pun. Like, I'm like, dig deeper, you guys. I love it. It's fine. It's amazing. It's like, fuck it. I cut you off again. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, so that's, so Simon scenes aside, do you have any other favorites, Chris?
Yeah, we touched on it briefly. I think the whole Bonaventure Hotel horror scene is just, it's like classic.
Yeah.
I mean, this film is like genre creating. Like, you know, The Simpsons make fun of like, you know, Schwarzenegger films all the time. This is just like the postmodern buttery version of it. Like there's all of these sequences like you were talking about, but this horse scene is so America. It's so fucking cool. It's so fun. You know, it starts off with that awesome fight scene in the bathroom where there's like another jacked dude fighting. That's a great fight sequence. Got the trope of like
two bathroom fights of all time. It's like Mission Impossible, Fallout, and
yeah, the Mission Impossible one. Yeah,
but you don't get Mission Impossible. You don't get Cavill. You don't get that without this fucking scene.
No, you don't.
And like, just like it plays with the fact that you could fucking just break a bunch of fucking porcelain. Just fucking go, dude. Just fucking head in the toilet. Chill out, you know, or I don't know. I can't remember what the fuck he says, but it's just like
cool off.
Sorry. Yeah. I fucked up with Batman fucking four. This going into that, like Clydesdale or no, like the horse scene with the fucking, you know, Kawasaki, you know, and then that guy makes it and then it ends on a joke. I mean, this leads, like, you know, the horse is like, fuck that, we're not doing it, and he flies off, like.
What the hell were you thinking? I mean, I had the guy, and you let him get away. Look at me when I talk to you. What kind of a cop are you anyway?
This movie plays with all of those themes that action, you know, and I will say from a genre standpoint, this movie is like a hybrid of a bunch of things. It's got like, you know, erotic thriller, it's action, it's comedy, it's racist, it's got all of them. But like
it's racist throughout.
Yeah. But it
a
it
lot kind of different is like, types of racism.
Yeah,
like malignant racism, funny racism, really scary racism, violent racism.
Lines in the movie is when I really deeply
wait. I stop you there? It should be three white guys. This podcast should be three white guys saying, I don't think this is like that. Should be the name. Like, I don't think this is racist.
When Charlton Heston's Spencer Trilby,
oh god,
who deeply problematic himself, asks
very problematic,
the most problematic human being in American cinema. But when
a piece
asks,
of shit,
when he asks.
Yeah.
Why do they call him the Sand Spider?
He's formed his own splinter faction called Crimson Jihad.
Yeah, I guess he thought the other terrorist groups were a little too warm and fuzzy for his taste.
They call him the Sand Spider.
Why?
Probably because it sounds scary.
This is impressive, gentlemen. Of course, it would be even more impressive if you actually knew where he was.
I really like that line. I think it's a great line.
Because
you're expecting something deeply racist. Why are they calling him the Sand Spider? And he's like, probably because it sounds scary. Like, complete sincerity. I'm like, that's great work from Grant Heslov and probably from this script because it didn't go to a bad place. It was a good
place. I'm sure that was a same day rewrite when that actor was about to say it. Yeah. And he was like, you know, maybe we should put a joke here, James, you know?
Yeah.
He's fantastic. He's great in it.
Yeah. I can't remember the film. I loved it. It was like 97. And maybe it's one we could do down the road, but it was the first time I watched one of these movies where it was about terrorists taking over a plane. Steven Seagal was in it.
Executive
Russell
decision.
Was in it.
Oh, fuck yeah. Executive I know exactly fucking what you're decision. Fucking talking about, baby.
But that great was the movie. First time I. It's a great,
great movie.
The fucking doc, awesome.
That's the, isn't but it the Kurt Russell one?
Yeah, Kurt Russell, where Steven Seagal, you think it's going to be them together, and Seagal dies immediately. And
very
you're like,
quickly.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. They were like, not him. We'll do that movie. but that was the first time I watched like a action movie and I was like, oh, like this doesn't add up. Like, is it literally like anybody from, you know, east of America, like the bad guy?
But that's this is what I would say is it's not good, but it, for me, especially as an outsider in Australia, and is slightly detached. It's actually deeply fascinating when you're watching it to like chart through like, when is it okay? Like, so it's like Nazis, always bad. South Africans during apartheid, bad. Most of the time during the Cold War, like literally from like 50 to early 90s, Russia, bad. And then there was a nexus where it was like we go from the really, deeply political movie Rambo 3, where the Mujahideen are the good guys with Rambo fighting the Soviet Union. And then a couple of years later, we're like, oh, cool. Arabic terrorists are now the thing. And it's so funny to watch the way that, like, I just wonder, this is a movie that is made by James Cameron. It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger. It makes hundreds of millions of dollars. It's so weird. They wouldn't put a villain in that wasn't, I guess, was so deeply unfamiliar for the audience that it would alienate them or have them scratching their head. So then for me as an outsider, I'm like, oh, what was happening in the early 90s that made it okay for us to have Arabic terrorists? And you're like, oh, fuck. Of course. Like, you've got the first...
Oh, yeah, of course. Gulf War.
You've got the first Gulf War conflict that's happened, and that whole, you know, has reignited that concept. And it's almost like, well, you know, obviously in the 1970s in Europe, American media probably pretty occupied with like with Vietnam and things like that. But like there were a lot of conflicts about, you know, Black September terrorists, et cetera, Munich. It's covered much more thoughtfully and ambivalently later with, you know, things like Munich and Spielberg. But I like to kind of go like, isn't it? It's actually more fascinating that it was so okay that Jim Cameron's like this. I use this villain because like people aren't going to scratch their heads. Like, I think it's a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
Is it wrong? Yes. Is it racist? Yes. Is it probably result in unnecessary racial profiling of, you know, of innocent people? Absolutely. But it's also like, that's why popular art is interesting, because it's like, this was made for a mass audience in 1994. And I would never have thought that Arabic terrorists were the bad guys at this time. And yet they're the bad guys at this time, according to James Cameron's, you know, popcorn, stupid Arnold Schwarzenegger spy comedy. You know, it's really fascinating, despite being when we reflect on it now, you're like, yeah, it's awful and it's bad and it's terrible. Like, make the villain be smarter with the villains. But yeah, it's nonetheless still interesting to look at how, you know, how values, particularly in like the larger majority of America at that time, were like, yeah, totally cool with that. And now we can be a little bit more intellectual about it and go with hindsight and go, yeah, that's absolutely fucked up. It's awful. And still today, some of these attitudes are still like so accepted. And there's a dehumanization of Mid-Eastern people. And it's like, yeah, but like...
But they're people on planet Earth. Just yeah.
Yeah, it's you can totally see all that. But it's also like, for me, I found it fascinating as well as kind of harrowing and awful. I found it fascinating that it was like totally okay. In 93, they're making this movie before it's released. And they're like, yeah, cool, this works. It's fine. We don't have to think about it. It's not going to result in anything bad. It's not going to age badly at all. Look at this. It's fine.
Well, and they also like totally, you know, they entomb their terrorism in like the most beautiful aspects of their ancient history when they rip apart those Persian artifacts.
And yes.
Only to store the new, like it's so crazy.
It's crazy.
Really, stomp on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you're right. Like, is James Cameron, you know, is he just making meat out of what's happening at the time, or is he ahead of the curve in terms of his racial boogeyman on that, you know?
Yeah.
Because USS Cole is after that. It's in 98, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's easy. I think at the end of the day, you have writers in a writer room. You have, you know, they're coming up with the people who this is going to be. I think that there, you could just chalk that up to lazy writing, really. Like, we need to find a bad guy for this Arnold Schwarzenegger film. And
yeah, Fall of the Cold War, it can't be the Russians. Leave it at maybe that. It's a terrorist organization. Okay, cool. Who could it be? Blah. They just randomly pick a Mid-Eastern terrorist group. They make it up. They're trying to mirror things like Black September, et cetera. They're, you know, Crimson Jihad. Like, they're even using Crimson Jihad, Black September. You know, like, they're trying to... It feels so reductive and stupid to real life, you know, whether you would call them terrorist groups or whether you would call them resistance, whatever the case may be. It feels like it was just kind of shorthand.
And that's ultimately like Bond in this, you know, the
Bond's
original
the worst
Bond.
For it. The worst for it.
Yeah.
But later, the later Bond, I mean, even those villains are more complex.
Yeah.
Like
definitely
Mission Impossible, like they're scary guys, you know,
and they're anarchists and they're also like defectors who want to, you know, take policy into like these far right fascistic,
right,
you know, like end of the world schemes and stuff like that. They're slightly more thoughtful because they want them to age more gracefully, which is why it's like,
yeah,
you know, why Lies is out of print everywhere.
Maybe, yeah, it's like, falls into, you know, like,
Don't do a 4K on that one. Like, I don't want Twitter to come for me on this.
That is interesting what you're saying. You know, if you look at the history of where we're going, because I found it really surprising. I was going in to see, you know, Top Gun, and I'm going, ooh, who is it? And it was so ambiguous, but it still worked. It was just like random.
We're making a random Eastern European, vaguely Eastern European villain of no known origin. Because we don't want to fuck with this. It's like in the 80s, it's like we're making it Russia because they'll always be our villains. Next minute, 1989, the wall goes down and it's like, oh, okay, maybe they won't be. Like, you know, like, so that kind of ages poorly. But yeah, it's, I think that.
And now they won't make, I mean, Russia's still our villains, but they still want that market.
Yes, of course, because now it's about horrible. It's, the capitalism is even more extreme.
It's even never, there's never Chinese or Russian villains because
could
like
never be a Chinese.
They want to sell movies there. Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to sell.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, we have to talk about one other great scene. I know we've kind of gone on one here, but
oh, wait. Before I just want to mention two things about that scene. Something that I never forget is Arnold on the horse getting into the elevator. Like that moment is so fucking
and
so crazy to me. And the other thing is
a fucking hotel. That's a hotel in LA. That's at the Westin Bonaventure. So it's actually like a little inside baseball. It's this very famous architecturally designed hotel. They have elevators that are external like that. So it's perfect for shooting scenes like that.
Is that the one where,
you've driven by it. It's got like the four domes.
In the line of fire.
It's in the line of fire is where I thought Rob was going with that. Yeah.
Aim high.
And there's a really cool hotel, there's a hotel bar. If you guys ever want to go, it rotates. You can, you know, get some crab bites and suck on a soda pop.
Crab bites? You fucking dirty dog. The other thing is...
That's one thing I would like to do this year. I'm just going to put it out in the universe. I would like to come to LA. I would like to have some prime pizza with Rob Belushi and Chris Kennedy.
Let's do a fucking... Let's do a live.
I love your hat, and I would like to, suck on some crab bites with you, dirtbags. That sounds immense.
You got a bedroom right here, buddy.
Oh, we'll pot
and sleep. But the other thing, I would love to fucking touch your body in human form. the other thing is like that sweet little scene.
No, turn around. Arnold. Do it more slowly. Very slowly.
Gotta talk about that scene.
I like when Arnold has that little small conversation with the horse after he doesn't jump. It was very charming.
Now the scene is, not to sound too perverse, but you know, we've gone through the full gamut in this show. But the Jamie Lee Curtis dance scene is the other terrific scene of the movie. And it's so fantastic because I also love when he's got the guy recording what he's going to say. And he's like, who wants this shit? Harry? And he goes, Salimia.
That's the best. Yeah.
It's so funny that he does it. And then he goes and does that scene. And Jamie Lee Curtis being this bumbling housewife, like you only have to, what's the Travolta movie where she's the dance instructor, the gym, whatever it is, the aerobicize instructor. Do you guys remember that movie? It's like meme to death. She's like pelvic. Yeah. Yeah. So like.
That's the Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd movie. Trading,
places, not only Trading Places, but it's also I'm trying to think of see the one that she was in with John Travolta. I've got to go to like her, it's her and Travolta, and she's like a gymnastics instructor. And you always see the memes. I've got to go and find it. It's Perfect. It's a movie called Perfect by James Bridges. Mm. A female aerobics instructor meets a male reporter doing a story on health clubs. Yes, that's it.
Yeah,
Cover of Rolling Stone.
But it isn't Love at First Sight. Yeah, so Perfect is the movie that they were in together. And so you've seen Jamie Lee Curtis be like hot and great, and this is her in her like as Helen doing this scene. It's just a phenomenal scene, and I love it to pieces, especially because he drops the tape recorder. I love how it's shot. It's so massively shot. It's silly. It's also sensual. It's great. I had a great time with this scene. I always have a great time. It cracks me up. Especially when she lets go of the bed frame and she falls on her ass. That is so funny. It's deeply funny.
It's so funny.
When she walks in and she checks herself, in the mirror.
Yeah.
She stumbles on her foot.
Yes.
On her shoe, too.
And she rolls her ankle on the heel when she lets everything off. Yeah.
And then it's really hot. I don't know. She's just got the hair, puts it back. It's great.
It's one of the best visual transformations like I've ever seen. Is her ripping that dress up and doing her hair? Yeah, you're like, holy fuck!
My little 9-year old brain is just like, what? Like,
yes. Yeah. I was gonna say at about 9, I was like, I'm a man now.
The whole thing though, it starts with like the. That goes into the interrogation, and it's just like. To me, that's the whole point of the Simon stuff is to have that scene, the interrogation scene, and then this scene with the sodium amytal or whatever they give him. Yeah, the truth serum. Like three of the most fun, clever scenes between like a husband and a wife with weird stakes. And to me, that's the whole movie, other than Bill Paxton, you know.
Well, how about this one
dancing like a dog?
What about the machine gun falling down the staircase and killing all of the
right.
Yeah, like ugh.
His take to her is so great too. And
I love
like,
when they're listening to the guys down there and he goes, "We're cool, we're badasses, blah 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 blah." He's translating for what they're saying. It's very funny.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our favorite characters and quotes. Let's take a tiny break and let's get into it because I feel like we're gonna just jump into our favorite quotes. I'm gonna jump in here real quick. My favorite quote in the movie, because Rob brought it up just now, and Chris Rob and I were just talking about it before the break, which is the sodium amytal scene. where he goes, ask me a question you know I'm going to tell a lie to. And she goes, have you ever killed anyone? And he goes, yeah, but they were all bad.
They were all bad.
I just love that quote so much. It's so good. It's so silly. It's the perfect chemistry of this movie. Like, there's certain scenes where you just know that, you know, obviously this went off to be made into a television series and, you know, people have tried this sort of chemistry before. And I just think that that scene is like a chemistry scene. If you're ever trying to make something like this, you should make someone do that scene with a partner. And if they could do it really well and their chemistry was fire, you'd know you had something, because that's just an amazing scene. And that's probably my favorite quote. Other than the Simon quotes, there's so many quotes from Simon in this movie that are just outstanding. Yeah, really fantastic stuff.
The other part of that scene that's great is, are we going to live? Or are they going to kill us?
No, here, I got it right.
Are we going to die?
Okay. Ask me a question I'd normally lie to. Helen Tasker, are we going to die? Harry. Yep.
Yep. They're going to shoot us in the head.
They're going to shoot us in the head, and they're going to torture us to death. Oh, they're going to leave us here when the bomb blows up.
Harry!
You tell on me, I tell on you. And then he tells he does the fucking classic action thing where it's like he tells the guy how he's going to kill him.
It's awesome.
Like, that's just, it's fucking, I'm going to take the thing and I'm going to fucking the meat cleaver. And it's just like, there's a reason these movies make you feel good, because like, they make you feel fucking great, you know? And they just don't. They just have devolved, you know. It's like entered into Expendables territory, and I haven't gotten into those movies. No knock on those, but I just, you know, never saw any of those. But it's like they are really trying to like get into the energy that this movie just so unbelievably accomplished.
It's fun. Like, I do. It's also really funny that these movies, like that it is really taking itself seriously, and like, that's what's kind of funny about Expendables and all that. They're like, what the fuck are we doing back then? Like, what were we doing? You know,
yeah.
Like, this movie is like, but you know, Arnold's, he's a fucking star, man. It's like, I'm always like, how the fuck, this guy can barely speak English. How is he the fucking man all the time? And it's just,
He's so
got to
smart.
Shine, dude.
He's so smart.
He's smart.
He's so smart. Everyone. He knows when he can. He learned the best lesson from Terminator. How do I say less? How do I have more like one-liners? How do I give other people the dialogue? How do I just react to things? Like, that's why Tom Arnold's such a great foil for Schwarzenegger.
He's the engine.
And Harry. He's just talking word vomit. And Harry's whole thing is to like the one barb or the one harsh stare.
Stop,
you know,
helping.
All that.
Yeah.
And, stop chewing me up.
Stop chewing me up. And I will say, his character is so weird, and like his reactions are so surprising as somebody who has like a deep seated rage and, you know, just omniscient self hatred. Like, the way he reacts to his buddy really kicking him in his worst possible moment so hard is, it takes him a long time to tell his friend to shut the fuck up. And I'm like, my God, if my friend like looked at me funny in that moment, it would be like, you know, felony assault charge. And, but yeah, those are great. Those are great. I mean, it's.
What about this one? If not for me, Helen, do it for your country.
Bill Paxton, what a fucking king. We have to do Twister on this show. We have to do Twister before the movie.
We have
Twisters
to do Twister and Lou. That trailer did not look. Anyways, that we'll save that for the Chris and Rob Nepo Baby Hot Take Corner.
Yeah.
Oh, there's
Finger on the Pulse of America from two.
Of America's favorite Nepo babies.
America's favorite baby corner.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get ahead of it.
Favorite characters. I'm gonna go with, I mean, Simon's the one, right? Like, he has to be. And I do really...
Simon's my favorite character maybe in all Arnold Schwarzenegger movies combined. Like, he's such a, like, a little fucking fuck. It's like, he's so great. Like, he's such a shit.
He may just
shit.
Be like the heavyweight champion of all characters in any Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, but like, he's so good.
You know what else, like, Pat, like, I think about is later when he's in Nightcrawler and he's so fucking good again. And he's fucking going toe-to-toe with Gyllenhaal in, like, to me, maybe my favorite Gyllenhaal performance. And, like, I fucking love that movie. But when he's out there and he's like, if you knew what I was offering you, you'd be sucking my fucking dick. And he, like, flicks the coffee straw at Jake Gyllenhaal when he's offering him to, like, team up and be his second driver in his, like, van. And I'm just like, he was always fucking phenomenal. And, like,
he's
you just believe him. You believe him as a fucking vampire. You know what I mean? You just, like, believe
so
him.
He's so good. He's so good. His whole career is littered with iconic, great characters. Littered.
Yeah.
Like, even Edge of Tomorrow, he fucking rules. Like, he rules in that movie.
God, that's another fucking great movie. Love
great
that movie.
He rules. He, like, I mean, just look at this guy's. I mean, he's in Titanic. He's in Twister. He's in True Lies. He's in Tombstone. He fucking rules in Tombstone. He's in Predator 2. He's
someone on Twitter was like, have you, like, Bill Paxton's great. Have you ever seen Club Dread? And I was like, oh, I saw Club Dread in the theater, my friend. But it was such, like, a weird pull. And I was like, Club Dread is, I love Broken Lizard. Club Dread's a weird one, but fucking Bill Paxton's great. It's
oh my
so
God.
Great.
God, I didn't realize. So he passed away in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was from complications, right? He had a surgery and then there was complications. Oh, 2017 is when he passed away. But his last film to come out was in 2019. That's funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah, these posthumous films.
For me, it's
incredible.
Paxton, obviously. I mean, Arnold is Arnold, and he's in a different caliber. For me, it's Paxton, Jamie Lee Curtis, Dushku.
Yeah.
In that order, and then Tom. Fuck.
I'm gonna put Tom Arnold higher. I'm gonna call it Paxton. I'm gonna go Tom Arnold, and then Jamie Lee. And I think that Tom Arnold is doing a lot of heavy lifting in this movie, and I think the movie crushes because he's doing it. And Paxton is not a scene stealer. The movie is stolen by Simon. It's
by
stolen
him, it
so hard that he has to be in the.
You think you're watching another movie?
Yeah, he steals the entire movie.
When he fucking look, when he laughs in the Corvette and he's like missing a back tooth and it's exposed, it's so funny. And then there's another time when he fucking it's like my wife and I were laughing and like she is tough to get a laugh out of, man. It is like. Why my self-esteem is so low all the time. But she's laughing and I look at her and I'm like, did you see that? And she's like, yeah. One of them was that look he gave from the London, well, quick stop in London. She's like, she said Academy Award. And then the other one was, he like crosses his eyes when he goes, like when there's a gun on him and he's like, ugh. And it is so fucking stupid. Like it's like, oh man. Yeah. No, look, Tom Arnold's fucking great. He's killing. He gives a great performance. I'm just like,
listen, I think
he does his job. He's great. He's fine.
No, let's not end on Tom Arnold. Let's end on Valet Bill Paxton. What a fucking True Lies, a movie that has problems and has dated badly, but the one thing that hasn't dated is how much Bill Paxton crushes in this movie, steals it,
so
wrestles
crazy.
It away. It wrestles it away, like, from the biggest movie star in the world.
From the and his part should be the thing that ages the worst.
Of course.
And it doesn't. He's just a
best,
piece of shit.
It's the best part of the movie. It's the best
Tom
part
Arnold
of the movie.
is dropping B words and like violent fucking sexist lore from 14-year-old girls to married women to women of color, you know, and like terrible. Paxton shit is just, it should be the worst, and it's somehow like, it's still fucking evergreen douchebaggery, man. It's just like
the like he's the king of all used car salesmen.
Yeah,
he's the
that's
he's
what
the
it
saint.
Is.
He's the saint. He should be sanctified as the saint of all shitbag used car salesmen. He's the king.
God damn it!
I have to give a shout out to you know, just to the fact that you do have character actors like, who I was not familiar with until I was Googling this, but Art Malik, who plays your head bad guy in this movie.
He's phenomenal.
Just on a simple
movie. Phenomenal in this
just
movie.
On a, it's just it's so funny that, and it's so funny we're talking about like the trend, and obviously it's we've thankfully trended into a better use of actors from around the world, and I'm happy to report that he will be in Hamlet. You know,
he's a Brit.
They're gonna be redoing Hamlet.
He's a Brit. Yeah, he's a Brit. So
no, I'm sure. It just goes to show though, like how these guys were, men and women were just, the typecasting was like fucking incredibly terrible. And so whenever like some fucking, they will remain nameless, but some fucking actor who looks like me is like, hard to get a job, huh? And I'm like, you know, you can shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like, tide's always turning, man.
Tide's,
you know what I mean?
Turning.
It's all fine. It's all good. It's a course correction that needed to happen, dude.
Yeah.
You know? And so I never complain.
Yeah.
But
not as easy. Not, you mean not as easy as it used to be, is what you mean.
That's what they meant. Yeah.
Like that's what I mean. Like, you mean not as easy as it used to be, buddy?
It's
hard to get
like,
a job for everyone.
Yeah.
I hate that. I'm just like, run your own race, dude. We all got fucking mouths to feed. But that dude, he does bring like Hamlet energy. I mean, he's straight vibrating in every shot with like pure fury and hatred.
Yeah.
He brings like a wonderful, you know, malevolent energy to that guy. And he's scary. Like that look back. Remember when he gets out of the pool and he fucking puts his hair back? He's like, oh, you think I'm bald now? Look how bald I really am.
Typecast aside, to be a convincing villain is a fucking job that, you know, it takes a lot of fucking work, you know. And
I mean,
he just
most committed actor on that set, probably tie between him and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, 100%.
Dushku is just existing in her own fucking private poetry, man. I mean, you guys are sleeping on the amazing 50-word performance of Elijah Dushku. I just think she's fucking wonderful.
Can I also shout out, I can't find his name right now as we're talking, but there is a henchman who is in Heat and True Lies. In Heat.
Marshall.
In Heat, I'm going to go and find him. In Heat, he plays the guy that's in the drive-in and who gets like blown away by Neil McCauley in the car. And Christian Hairless. He's like the guy who's got the Uzi.
Is he the guy that comes up to the door?
Hold on, wait. I'm just going to find.
Yes, it is.
This is the shooter at the drive-in. Yes, Max Daniels is his name. And he's in Heat and True Lies. And he's in Casino, and shit, he's in Iron Man too, a stunt guy, but he's the shooter with the small Uzi gun, and he does the bathroom fight scene. He's not the gigantic guy in the bathroom fight scene, he's the other guy, but a king,
the guy
being in Casino.
The guy at the sink?
Yeah, Casino and Heat.
Max, and
the only other person, De Niro, in Casino and Heat in 95. Come on, shout out to fucking Max Daniels, you king. Bless you.
Fucking love it, dude. I love it. Hey,
folks,
this is fun, guys.
Folks, always a pleasure talking for you and with these beautiful gentlemen. Love you guys to pieces. Thank you for this. Thank you for indulging us in this movie, despite its problems.
Yeah, thank you.
It has its saving graces, and that is Bill Paxton. And if you turn it off after the Simon scenes, that's okay.
Turn it back on for the last scene because he's in the button.
The bookend. The little button, yeah, as Rob said. Yeah. The little button. You got a little tag on the end. But bless you all, and we'll catch you again soon. Talking another movie from the 90s. We have so many options to cover, but we'll come back and talk to you guys soon. Thanks for listening.